The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Continuing this conversation about not self, just a quick kind of summary of what we talked about last time, that the kind of the key teaching around not self is not that there's nothing here, you know, that we sometimes the idea with not self, people think, how do I get rid of this thing that I think of as self? But it's more that the teaching on not self points to a misunderstanding, an attribution of a thingness or a stability or an entity-ness to what is actually a process, that there's not a stable kind of entity that travels through time in this body, but that it's just a whole set of processes that are unfolding, and that set of processes unfolding is kind of misattributed this stability. So I wanted to read a couple of questions from the questions that were submitted and start there. Kind of questions about what are practices, they're kind of really practical questions. What are practices for releasing identity or identification? How does one let go of the identity of self to overcome the fear of failure? And so these questions are essentially kind of practical, practice-based. What does it mean to practice with letting go of a sense of self? And what I'd say, just to start, and this will be, you know, this is kind of the thread of the whole conversation that I want to offer, that, you know, there are ways to practice to understand that what we think of as self is not a self. But we do that, how we do that, how we practice with that, is to get to know really well what it is that we think is self. So it's kind of an exploration. The practice isn't about how do I let go of it, but how do I understand what I actually think self is? We need to understand what we think self is. And that supports the mind to release it. And we don't do the letting go. It's like, you know, we don't look at this and say, oh, there's that self, I can let that go. It's more the understanding that we're misunderstanding, and the system kind of recalibrates and lets go of that misunderstanding. Nothing really changes except the misunderstanding goes away. So it's kind of a funny thing. But there are ways that we get caught. We identify with things. This person mentions a fear of failure. We identify, like for me, I had a very strong identification around anger and self-hatred. And there are many of those identities can be very painful. And so there's suffering bound up often with some of our identities, but not always. You know, sometimes our identities are kind of... I think many of our identities and the ways that we attribute a sense of self are kind of strategies for navigating the world. They're ways of ways that we have responded to the world that have kind of become patterns, and those patterns become familiar, and then we kind of have a sense of, yeah, that's the way I respond to this situation. And I'd say too that those you know, those identities, those strategies for navigating life, they're not, even the ones that are like my self-hatred, you know, even those, there's something in there where that strategy is somehow trying to help us. You know, it's like these strategies are created in our conditions and our conditioning and our lives, and often they are trying to help us in some way. And so part of the exploration around getting to know what we think of as self, or exploring our identities, and that's one of the ways I like to think about this. How do we begin to understand not self? We begin to understand not self by exploring our identities. getting familiar with our identities. And as we get familiar with our identities, we see that some of the threads of our identities are kind of tied up with, you know, reactive patterns in history. And some of those threads are tied up with wishing for our well-being and our safety and the safety of our community and our family and our friends. And so those senses of self are not always wholly, you know, reactive. And so I think that the investigation or the exploration around what is it that we take to be self, what is this identification? What is it that I'm thinking of as self? That kind of helps, that investigation or that curiosity begins to help the mind to kind of understand which parts of those patterns are based in wholesome wishes for our well-being and our safety and our security and our, and so those are metta wishes, actually. Those are metta wishes, and many of the strategies that we navigate life with are connected to those metta wishes, but they do get kind of tangled up with fear and confusion and wanting and aversion, so they get tangled up. But the process of exploring the identity with mindfulness, and that's a lot about what we can do here, get familiar with what we're calling a sense of self with mindfulness, that the mindfulness begins to help the mind tease apart the reactive side from the side that's actually rooted in wholesomeness. And so the investigation or the exploration begins to help us to understand that we were calling something a thing that isn't a thing, and then begins to tease apart the processes that were embedded in that and help us to let go of the processes that are not so helpful and encourage the processes that are helpful. So this exploration around letting go of identity, I think I would put it more, can we understand our identities? And then the wisdom that develops as we understand our identities helps the system to let go of those parts of the process that are not so helpful and supports those parts of the process that are more leading in the direction of an ease, a heart of ease, a heart of connectedness, a heart of caring, a heart of compassion. So I wanted to kind of start there with the kind of that frame that what we explore here, one of the big explorations is kind of curiosity about what do I call self? And we all have many different things that we call self. Actually, when we start to ask this question of ourselves, what do I take to be self? We might find, and we talked about this a little bit last week, I asked you to kind of name some things, and some people talked about, roles, you know, different roles that you take. So, you know, parent or sibling or student or coworker, or those kinds of things, those can be identities. And we also identify with particular patterns in our mind, habits of mind. Like for me, the identification with the habit of self-hatred. It's like, oh yeah, that's me. I hate myself. You know, so that we identify with patterns and familiar things that arise. So there's a lot of different ways that we identify. And over the course of this, the series of reflecting on having conversations about not self, we'll touch on a variety of those different ways, social identities that we might reify around or take to be me or mine, and emotional identities and role identities. We'll talk about some of those. But tonight, what I wanted to aim at was one that the Buddha really highlighted in his teachings. There's one sutta where he kind of gives a discourse on this teaching of not self. And I won't go through the whole discourse tonight because I like to, what I'm trying to do in this class is talk for a short while and then open it up for conversation. But we'll go over it during some of the other classes. But a little piece of that is that he points out or asks, he asks people to reflect. He asks his followers, he's having a dialogue with them, and he asks them to reflect. So, basically it comes down to, can you control your body entirely? You know, it's like, we can do certain things, like I can choose to move my arm or, do certain things physically. So there's a little bit of control that I have around my body, a little bit of control perhaps I can have around, okay, I'm going to breathe in now. I'm going to breathe out now. So we have little ways in which we have control, but we misattribute a sense of control. One of the key ways that the Buddha points to a sense of self coming, a sense of self, kind of a way that we identify as I or me, is the part of our psyche or our system that seems to have control, or that feels like it should have control. So it does. We have this attribution of control a lot, and when we feel like we don't have control over something, we usually feel, I mean, we might feel either that we blame somebody else for that, we feel betrayed by the world, or, you know, somebody else took my control away from me, or we blame ourselves, we didn't do it right. But what the Buddha points to, he actually says, for various areas of our experience, he says, you know, the body is not self. We tend to identify around the body. He says, the body is not self. He said, if the body were self, then it would be possible to say of the body, may my body be thus, may my body not be thus. But it is not possible to say that of the body because the body is not self. And so it's kind of pointing to, and he talks about that with respect to feelings and the ways that we perceive things and mind states that arise. So emotions, for instance, he calls them mental formations. The Pali is sankhara. He says they're not self. Sankharas are not self. And so that includes the whole range of emotions and mind states. And so we could substitute in there a couple of different emotional things. Like, we sometimes feel like we should have control over our emotions. Like, why don't I have control? You know, why can't I just make the mind not be angry? You know, it's like, it doesn't feel good to be angry. Why can't I turn it off? But the Buddha would say, well, anger is not self. It is, if it were self, it would be possible to say, may my mind not be angry. Or, you know, may my mind around anger be like this. But it's often not possible to do that because the anger is a conditioned phenomenon. It's arising based on conditions. And sometimes those conditions have momentum. And so we get to live out that. We get to experience that. So that, I mean, sometimes we can step back. I mean, there is little bits of elements of ways that our system is designed to navigate and choose, okay, well, maybe I won't follow through on that anger, or maybe I can repress that anger. So there's certain ways that our mind does have some measure of control, and that some measure of control that we have, it's like, it's pretty small actually, but our minds pick that up and think, yeah, I have control. I should be able to control these things. If I can't control them, it means I'm failing, or somebody is failing me, or the world is to blame, or something like that. And so one of the things that Buddha is pointing to in this, I think one of the things I find so so interesting is that so many ways that we get frustrated, so many ways that we get frustrated are simply manifestations of the fact that we don't have control over something. So many ways that we get angry or confused, there's a piece of it around uncontrollability. like that I can't make it be the way I want it to be. And the Buddha says, that's just evidence for not self. It's not a problem. It is the nature of experience to have its own unfolding. And so the kind of the curiosity we can explore around this particular sense of self, I think, is to kind of be open to all of those times when there's a sense of, I mean, I think that this sense of self does manifest kind of more obviously, perhaps, with something like frustration. Like, why can't I make this be the way I want it to be? Why can't I control this? And so when there is that frustration and the mind is kind of railing about, well, why can't I do this? You know, why can't I be mindful when I want to be? You know, that example, you know, I pointed to it in the guided meditation. You know, the mind will wander. We sit down to meditate and say, I'm going to be mindful, and the mind wanders. You know, who did that? That you didn't choose to have your mind wander. It was a process that unfolded. But when we wake up, we blame ourselves. You know, we think, I should have had control over that. And then the waking up is another whole piece. You know, it's like, who did that? You know, the waking up happened, the mindfulness returned of its own accord. That too is evidence for not self. So this piece around the uncontrollability, kind of, this is the key piece I wanted to kind of express, and then we'll open it up to questions, is there's a lot of evidence for this understanding of not self. We just don't see it as evidence for not self. We see it as a failure of self. You know, so the fact that the mind wanders is not a failure of the meditation. You know, it's not a failure of the meditation. It's conditions unfolding. And if we can explore that, I mean, if every time we reflected on the re-arising of the mindfulness as being, oh, evidence for not self, that would begin to have a momentum of understanding around not self. But no, what we do is, oh, my mind wandered. I shouldn't have done that. What can I bring my mind back? So yeah, there's a lot of evidence for not self, actually. And this is interesting because it feels counterintuitive, right? This teaching of not self. It feels like this self is so like obvious. You know, how can it not be what I think it is? And so but what that points to too is that we are misinterpreting the evidence for not self too. We don't see it, and this is part of the way views work. So we have a particular view, for instance, a view about something, an idea about something. And when we have an idea or a view, the modern day psychology calls this selective attention. That when we have a particular perspective on a situation, our mind, based on that perspective, will pull things out of the environment that confirm that view, and won't pull things out of the environment that disconfirm that view. And so the sense of self is like that view. It's a view in our minds that we believe this me is here. This I has control. And so we don't, when evidence for not self, when this evidence around uncontrollability presents itself, we don't understand it as evidence for not self. We actually interpret it as evidence that I failed in somehow, reinforcing the sense of self. So this is an interesting kind of exploration. Whenever there's a sense of feeling like it's uncontrollable, you know, maybe something happens, like, you know, you're washing dishes and the you know, the dish slips and the dish breaks, and it's like uncontrollability. It's like, why didn't I control it? Well, it was conditions unfolding. It wasn't an I there. It was just conditions unfolding. And so anytime there's something that happens where there's that sense of uncontrollability, maybe the mind can turn towards, oh, evidence for not self. And just beginning to explore that as a different view. You don't have to pick it up as true yet. You know, you don't have to believe it yet. You don't have to believe that this is true, but just begin to question your perspective of self by kind of countering it with, oh, well, maybe that's evidence for non-self that I didn't have control of that. So that's the main piece I wanted to reflect on tonight. And let's just check in and see. Actually, let me break the recording here.